Thousands of survivors of the world's worst industrial accident blocked trains through a central Indian city today to demand more compensation. The protest came on the 27th anniversary of the disaster in Bhopal, where a Union Carbide pesticide plant leaked lethal gas that killed an estimated 15,000 people and maimed tens of thousands more. Archbishop Leo Cornelio of Bhopal says that 27 years on, the people are still waiting for justice to be done.
Our listeners, many will remember, others perhaps are too young to remember, that absolutely tragic chemical factory incident in Bhopal that marked the life of the entire region.
Yes.
The hundreds and thousands who died when the actual accident took place and have died since, because of course the legacy is still living onwards. What stage are we at in trying to get some justice for the victims of the Bhopal disaster?
Good. I know the whole history of this gas tragedy. I was in Indore that time as a young priest working, and I knew what happened. This is now more than 25 years that the gas tragedy took place. And there have been constantly strikes and fights and so on, all that. But one problem is that the people who really should have got help did not receive. Or those who received, they did not receive enough help. Church has done a lot from the beginning and continues to do, but then that is very little in itself. Government has been always politicizing this whole tragedy. The people who deserve help have not received it. And today also the fight goes on. Every year there are strikes. Every particular day they remember. But it is ultimately politicized. Justice is not done to the people where justice should have been done. Then I once said in my comment, saying that once for all, let justice be done to the people. Let us not keep on haranguing, keep on accusing somebody. They accuse foreign hand or accuse this company and all that. Company has been ready to give certain help. But where does that help go is the question. Who is benefiting from it? And the longer it drags on and the more it things take place, the more politically these leaders benefit. So ultimately, the injustice is very much so, very much there, and it will continue as long as this whole question is politicized. What I would see is that a non-political group who are socially very much conscious, who are really very, very, very committed to the cause, there are a lot of NGOs and so on, a committee has to be there which will somehow look into deeper into this matter and see where justice could be done and certain proposals. And for that, nothing much is done. They make commissions for different things. But then for this, there hasn't been a real effort, I feel.
Forgotten, but yeah, not yet over.
Forgotten.
The actual area that you're from in India, because it is such a vast, vast country.
Yeah.
Are we speaking about the north, south, east, west, to put in a geographical context for our listeners?
I'm in the from the central Indian region. And Bhopal lies almost in the center of the country. And there's a mission land, because more of the Catholics or Christians are in the southern part. Whereas here, it's a real mission area. We have practically 0.3 or 4% Catholics in that area. Christians even. Not only Catholics, but Christians as a whole. So it's a very, very frontier mission, very, very big frontier mission. And the mission becomes a challenge. It was a challenge in the past, but now it has become more a challenge because of the contrasting situations that we are facing. See, India is developing on the one side, very fast, economically, technologically, developing very fast. Globalization is a part of this whole understanding. At the same time, there is a certain amount of polarization growing also. Fundamentalism is growing because there is a contrast that is growing. We have most very educated, highly qualified people. We are highly rich people, but we are very poor people, people who may not have enough to eat for a day, people who are uneducated totally. Right now, maybe about 65% are educated, but these other 35%, so to say, they are very poor. They are very, very ignorant, uneducated. Okay. Then it is said last time in that particular survey, it showed that we have 275 million. That is about 27% of the people who don't have enough to eat. Poverty is still there. Only India as a country shows that we are economically developed country. It is true, because there are more rich people in India than maybe in any country because of the high population, but there are more poor people in India than in any other country. It depends on how people view the country's situation. Some may say India is highly developed, they don't need any help. Whereas others will say, those who go there and see the poverty and problems, they say, no, India still needs help. So something like that. So whenever we talk to other people, they keep on asking us, why does India need help? Okay, that is one aspect, economical. On the other hand, cultural polarization also is developing. What they say is that when we think of evangelization or Christianity being somehow propagated, they'll say, why do you do that? We have enough religions in our own country. Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, all these have origin from India. So why do you want to import religion? So Islam and Christianity and Judaism, all these are foreign religions, they say. So there is a religious polarization also growing, in the sense that there is a extreme group which somehow tries to target Christians and Muslims. Muslims are fighters. They fight again, fight back. Whereas Christians, we are taught from the Bible that if somebody strikes you on the one cheek, show them the other cheek. And this language, many people don't understand in India. For them, it is the hard way. So eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that was a Jewish system. And then Christianity doesn't believe in that. And when we try to say they will, this same way we preach, they say, then you are weak. But this is the strength, we know. In general, they'll agree. Because Gandhiji, for example, the father of the nation, believed in that very much. He had a high regard for Christ, high regard for Bible. He read the Bible. And he believed also that if Christians practiced what they have learned from the Bible, whole of India would become Christian, he had said. But then we Christians, we have also our limitations and we cannot follow. We cannot simply practice easily. It means we have human side, human weakness. So that's why Christianity then has become a sort of one of the religions. We are definitely working hard to help people develop their whole all-round development, reach out to them, especially the poor, the needy, uneducated, the sick, and so on, all that, through social, educational, and healthcare apostolates we are helping out. And direct evangelization also is going on. But we can't make too much noise about it. And we go quietly preaching about. And above all, we always hold that our life witness should be the testimony that we are to give to others. And life witness, because the scandals that we cause can only create a polarization also. So we try our best to be people of witness, people of testimony, giving testimony through our life. And it's a slow and hard process that goes on. But in general, in India, there is a regard for the Christians, for the missionaries, positively, I would say.
Very active. I understand the Indian church is extremely active,
very active,
in trying to emancipate the Dalits or
exactly.
The outcasts,
yes,
as they're known in India. And we know that at a national level, you had a march on Delhi of tens of thousands of Dalits from
there.
Right across India. Talk to us about this reality, this actual practice, practical being with the least of society, in which the Indian church has always been at the forefront.
Yes.
Speak to us about this march on Delhi.
Good. So I was myself present in that march. All the bishops were invited. Quite a number of bishops were there. Not all could come. And there was a good number of, participants. And we marched in order to show the discrimination that is being done by the government. Because Dalits and low caste people and tribals, they have special privileges granted by the constitution. And then we want these constitutional privileges for the Catholics or Christians as well. But by the very fact of their conversion, they are deprived of these privileges, which is discrimination. We don't believe in caste system as such, Christianity as a whole. But at the same time, people who convert from one religion to the other, immediately their economic situation doesn't change. Right, so they need help. So that help should not be deprived on account of their conversion. And the government is doing that injustice. And we are demanding, being a democratic country, we are doing our best to demand these rights of the Dalits. But the government has not been listening, because for the government, what is important is to be in power. there is a opposition, like for example RSS and BJP, they oppose this kind of say equality. Even if they convert, when they are given the privileges, what happens is tomorrow another thousands of people will convert. Their ploy is that they don't get converted because they lose the privileges, that's why they should not convert. And that is the reason why the government is not granting that privilege, these privileges, to the Dalits who convert. And that is totally wrong, unjust.
It's holding religious freedom prisoner, really, in reality.
Yes. So by the very fact that you convert, you lose all the privileges. What crime have you done? Free religion, we say, is a question of conscience. Nobody can force them. Many people think that you are forcing them by giving inducement and so on. But I constantly talk about it and say, openly I say, how can anybody force a religion on another person? Today you may convert the person, tomorrow who prevents you from getting reconverted, unless you put him into prison or subject him to certain tortures. As long as that doesn't happen, how can anybody push religion down the throat of another person? So why should you say that you are forcibly converting? There are accusations against Christians. Forcibly converting, which cannot happen. Nobody can forcibly convert because the conversion as such is a kind of a grace of God, we say. Baptism is an external, action. But conversion in itself is a grace of God. Only God can convert the hearts and minds of people. Like Saint Paul was smashed, put down from the horse. It is the grace of God that he got converted. Nobody forced him. He was totally against the Christianity. So also we have thousands of instances in Christianity who got converted by the grace of God. Maybe the messages have been preached, but then ultimately conversion is not because of the preaching, but because of the grace of God. So why should the government tell us that you cannot do this? Government makes laws now, anti-conversion. They speak about freedom of religion, but in reality, freedom of religion means anti-conversion. They're like Muslims, for example, they speak about this blasphemy law. Law of blasphemy. Anybody can accuse you of blasphemy. No testimony is needed. So also here, anybody can accuse you of converting, trying to convert. For example, sometimes for justice sake, if a person is, action is taken for some wrong deeds, these people can accuse Christians for inducing him or her to convert. And because we are not converting, they are putting us out of the job. So all kinds of accusations come because it is due to the law that the government has been making. Madhya Pradesh was the first state which made this law in 67-68. Now several other states have followed. So this is totally wrong. So we fight against any injustice. Because we are a democratic country, at least we can raise our voice. Nobody can stifle our voice. Even if we are a small minority. But there are many Hindus, many Muslims who are supportive of us. Educated, because many of the these Hindus are educated in our schools. They know the value, they know the moral grounding we give them. So many of them are. But then there are political groups who, for the political power, they use religion for their end. That is the main reason.
Religion. This is a subject, obviously, that you'd feel very, very dear to you, because we should point out to our listeners that yes, you are the Diocesan Archbishop of Bhopal, but you're also a Divine Word missionary.
Yeah.
Pope Benedict, in his speech to the last group, because you must remember that India is the fourth largest bishops' conference in the Universal Church, This has been a staggered ad limina of pilgrimage over the last year, starting way back before the summer.
Correct.
Your group is the last group, and you are the Diocesan Archbishop of Bhopal, but you're also a Divine Word missionary. And the Holy Father, in his speech to the last group, spoke about the unsung heroes of the Indian Church, and he mentioned men and women religious.
Yes.
And they're often the ones who are at the very front line in helping people realize their rights and helping them have an integral development.
Right. We have, for example, in Madhya Pradesh itself, we have an example of a sister who was doing a lot of social work, Rani Maria, an FCC sister, Franciscan. FCC.
Mm-hmm.
She worked for the poor Dalits and to liberate them from the clutches of these landowners, and then she was killed. So there are a lot of people who are somehow committed to her example. And then that man who killed her is now much more amenable. He has almost, you know, adopted that family as his family. So there is something that has happened, and people are impressed by that. So these are some of the examples. There have been other cases also. These are some of the examples that somehow make others wonder why these Christians go after these and are ready to even give their life even. So that way there is a testimony, there is a witness. And our mission activities are very much concentrated to the villages, to the Dalits, to the poor, to the tribals and so on. And then they somehow feel that, see, the another side is that in India many people are there who want these poor people to remain as they are. Development as a whole for a vast country, they think, is not possible. It is possible, but they think it's not possible. The second reason is that they want these poor and ignorant people to remain so, because they get them for work, cheap labor, slavery.
Exploit them.
Yeah, employ them anyway with small amount just to make give them sufficient to eat, and they are available. Otherwise, the demands rise and they will not have the services that they receive. Because there is the caste system is very much in the deep within our psyche, Indian psyche, Hindu psyche. It can be only taken over by a real conversion of heart, not conversion through religion, but conversion of heart.